Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Drive On podcast. It is a tragedy whenever a service member is killed in action. Not only does the nation lose someone who is selfless enough to put their lives on the line for others, but the families of that service member are also left behind to pick up the pieces. And on this podcast, I've had the opportunity to speak with several Gold Star family members, but an often overlooked subset of this category is the Gold Star siblings, the brothers and sisters of the fallen service members. So today, my guest is Thad Forrester, and his brother, Mark Forrester, was a U.S. Air Force combat controller who was killed in action in Afghanistan. Thad is the author of the book, My Brother in Arms, and the host of the Patriot to the Core podcast. And today, we're going to be honoring his brother, Mark, and discussing his experiences after Mark was killed in action. So welcome to the show, Thad. I'm glad to have you here.
Thank you, Scott. Great to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. And why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe a little bit about your brother, Mark, and your relationship with him?
Well, shortly after he was killed, within a day or two or three, I decided I was going to write a book about his life. You know, I didn't care that I didn't have any writing experience. And so for those of you who read the book, you'll know, you probably will realize that, but it didn't matter. I wanted the record of his life. And he didn't have any children, wasn't married. And so we needed to preserve his legacy. So yeah, there's five kids in our family, and Mark was the youngest. I'm next to the youngest, and we were very close. We lived together when he was in college. And so years later, I started Patriot to the Core podcast, and I don't have near the number of episodes that you have. I think I started before you, I think, Scott, but you have, you know, you've stayed at it and releasing a few a week now, two a week now. So I love doing it though. And I love speaking about, you know, Mark and our foundation and just sharing how important, you know, freedom is to me and my family.
Well, that's a great goal that you had when you set out to write that book, you know, to just put down his story, because, you know, he's no longer here to tell his story. And it's important for future generations to know the stories of the men and women who fight and sacrifice their lives for our freedoms. And, you know, people like your brother, my brother, they went out there not expecting that they were going to die. I don't think anyone goes and expects that that's going to happen. But I think anyone who puts a uniform on, and especially if they deploy overseas, they know that there is that possibility that they may not come home at some point. So, you know, it's a great thing that you're doing and honoring his memory and keeping his memory alive all these years later. And so that's definitely an admirable thing that you're doing. And I, you know, hats off to you for everything that you're doing there. So let's talk a little bit about Mark and kind of his background. He felt a calling to join the military, didn't he? Like, as he was growing up, and didn't he kind of feel like that was his purpose, like his mission in life was in the military? Like he was doing what he was supposed to be doing.
It came a little later. You know, we didn't really have in our family. I mean, our dad was in the Army National Guard for a few years, but that was before we were born. So it wasn't like a tradition in the family. And so really what happened is he was already kind of living a life of service. He was a volunteer missionary. He was serving in California, and 9/11 happened. And so that's kind of when he felt like, I think God wants me to help protect our freedoms and to help kill terrorists. And so, you know, that was 2001. So a lot of things happened because he didn't join until 2007. But yeah, he did feel that calling. He finished his mission. He went to college, and then he, you know, enlisted in the Air Force in 2007.
And his faith played a big role, not just in his military service, but in his life in general. From reading your book, I got to learn a little bit about your brother and how much his faith and his background has impacted him. And so you were talking about how that was kind of his calling, and it seemed like that was what he was meant to do, right?
Yeah. And I want to make it clear, and I tried to make it clear in the book, Scott, is I mean, look, it's so easy to say all these great things about him, you know, about your brother when they're not here. We do it all the time, but I tried to back it up with examples and with statements from people that knew him that were unsolicited, because I didn't go to people and say, tell me good things about Mark. You know, never once would I say something like that. And so, because I did get a lot of input in the book from teammates and from friends and teachers and coaches, but they voluntarily shared all this information. And so I think it was what we believed and we knew, but we weren't with him all the time. So it was great to hear these kind of to validate what we thought about him. Just being consistent in his standards, I think really is what's most important, is no matter what you believe, he just was consistent in every, no matter the situation.
Right. And that, I think that did come through in the book, because there were many examples, many stories that were provided in the book of people, not just necessarily family members, but other people he served with and other people in his life that basically said the same thing, that he had a strong foundation and like he knew kind of black and white. He knew right and wrong, and he stayed on the side of right as often as possible. I mean, he's human. He wasn't perfect. None of us are, right? And so, you know, I don't think it came across as, you know, he was this absolutely 100% perfect human being, because, I mean, that would have just been unrealistic. And I think he did a good job with kind of depicting his life and his values and the way he presented himself in his life. That was well done, I think, in the book. You know, coming across with different examples from different people throughout his life was kind of important to paint that picture. And I think you did that pretty well.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. So Mark was killed in action on September 29th, 2010, which was just about a month after my brother was killed in action. So tell us about how you and your family learned about Mark's passing.
We were given simultaneous notification. So at Mark's request, if anything were to happen to him, he had already, I don't know what the paperwork is called. You do probably, but you know, he had filled out that our parents and I would get notified simultaneously. So I go into some pretty good detail in the book about this, because people seem to be interested in it, but they scoped out my parents' house for many hours and waited till my dad got home from work, and then they notified him. And then within a few seconds or a minute, they knocked on my and my wife's door, which an hour and a half away in Tuscaloosa. And they, you know, told us, and it wasn't just random people. I mean, they were kind of random to us, but they weren't random to Mark. They knew him. They didn't pull him from the closest Air Force base. They were teammates and leaders of Mark's. And so that was very special to us, because they knew him, they had trained him, and they had probably a little more, you know, there was some emotion there because they knew him. And some of them had helped, you know, had decided he would go on this deployment to that location. So yeah, right. I think as far as combat controllers go, it was a relatively unique notification. Sorry, not for the combat controllers, but maybe our military altogether, the combat controllers is a little bit unique, I think, in that.
Right. And I was interested in that after reading the book, in how coordinated all that was, where they both were basically scoping out both houses to make sure you guys were home before going and giving the notification to one, and making sure that both got the notification at the same time. When my brother was killed, he was engaged. He had a fiance, and she lived in the same town that my parents lived in. And so, but they were not notified at the same time. They came and notified my parents first, and then they left after, you know, a little while, and then they went to her house and notified her as well. And so that was a little bit different, and I found it interesting that they would do something like that for Mark and for your family, you know, through that kind of notification process. It was really interesting how they were able to coordinate all of that.
Yeah. Had you already found out by the time your parents and his fiance found out?
I believe I had. I think I was actually the first person to find out, just because of, you know, just the way the message has to be communicated from basically one side of the world to the other. And I was in Afghanistan at the time, so it was really just a matter of, you know, radio calls, just getting that out to us. And so it took, I think, from the time that he died to the time that I found out, it was just a couple hours. And it was late at night when my parents found out, which was actually in reality, it probably wasn't much later than when I found out. It was probably a few hours after that. But yeah, I definitely found out first.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, the notification process in and of itself is pretty amazing, regardless of who's being notified or how it gets transmitted. Just because if you think about just how connected the world is these days, especially nowadays, but you know, back then, not so much. Yeah. But if somebody finds out about something in Afghanistan, you know, how easy would it have been to just drop an email to, you know, someone back in the United States, right? But they shut down all that communication, so that kind of thing doesn't happen. So that you don't end up getting notification. Like, could you imagine if you got an email from somebody that had served with Mark saying, yeah, sorry to tell you, you know, that would be the worst way to find
That's
out.
Right.
That would be awful, you know? Yeah. So the coordination that takes place throughout the military is pretty amazing. If you have never been unfortunate enough for the listeners to have received a notification like that, just the logistics involved are pretty incredible.
Yeah. And they got some suspicious looks in our hometown from, you know, a neighbor seeing, because they had some guys in civilian clothes that were going to be assigned to stay with us. But they were driving around the ones that, because everybody else in uniform were kind of back parked. And, you know, my neighbor was like, hey, y'all need some help. I've seen you come down the road a few times. And it some close calls, but it did work out about as good as it could, I think.
Right, right. Now, Mark died in what some have described as heroic and selfless. Would you be able to describe what happened that day that he was killed?
I'll do my best. I mean, I've made it like my mission to figure out really what happened or do all I can. It seems like not a lot of people were around, but this was like day two of a large scale mission. He was with the dismounted element this day. So he was the JTAC, and then there was another JTAC with the mounted element who was a good friend of his. And the best I know, based off of accounts from multiple people and from the Silver Star citation, is that they came under heavy fire. I think it was kind of like an ambush. And the team medic, who was Calvin Harrison, he was a Green Beret, and he was shot in the open. And, you know, and I don't know why he was out in the open, but he was. And they didn't know where the sniper was. I think they were maybe about two people out there in the kind of the green zone, I guess you call it, Scott. And Calvin went down, and then Mark, in his attempt to get to Calvin, was shot. So we know that Mark was talking to aircraft overhead. He had one or two F-18s. He had two Apaches, for sure, anyway. And the Apaches were the low birds. And he was telling them he needed help. He said, I got a man down. I need you now. But the problem was he didn't know where the enemy was, for sure. And even if he did, the enemy was too close to the Americans and some civilians that were in that village too. Some Afghan nationals were killed also at that time. And so I think Mark was just in a situation where he needed help, but he couldn't get any help from the air. And so he exposed himself and moving forward. And so he was shot through the forearm and into the upper chest. And went down as he was going to Cal.
Yeah, and that is about as selfless as it gets. I mean, knowing that there's an enemy out there, obviously your medic is laying there, he's been shot, he needs help. You don't know where that shot came from, but you're going to go out and try to help this guy anyways, because, you know, you don't want to just watch the guy lay there suffering and, you know, possibly die right in front of your eyes and not do anything. But at the same time, got to have in the back of your head knowing that, you know, I could end up succumbing to the same fate here if I do go out there. But if I don't, you know, how am I going to live with myself if I don't go and try to help this guy? So, you know, he was definitely stuck between a rock and a hard place at that point, because that was not an easy decision to make. But at the end of the day, he chose to serve a purpose bigger than himself. He chose to go and try to rescue his teammate there. And that was incredible. And, you know, reading that story in your book was pretty moving, and hearing how he went through all of that, you know, and I'm glad that you were able to share that today on the podcast, because, you know, I feel like sometimes the general public doesn't necessarily understand just how difficult it is in the military and how some of these split second decisions literally have life and death consequences. Yeah. But you have to make a decision. You have to do something. In this case, you know, Mark could have decided to just hang back and wait for, you know, the air support to clear out the enemy, but he didn't know when that was going to come. So he had to make a decision and he decided to go after this guy and try to help him. You know, unfortunately it didn't work out for him, but that was, you know, that was the decision he made. And, you know, it's a difficult one. I mean, regardless of what he ended up doing, it would have been a hard decision to make regardless. So,
I mean,
I'm glad you were able to share that.
Well, and you know, the Silver Star citation tells us that, which is really what we have to go by now, and tells us that, you know, it's kind of a simultaneous kill. So the guy that killed Mark and Calvin was killed. Mark shot him. So that's, okay. You know, at least we know that he was a guy, he was a Pakistani. And I think he probably had a pretty good name in the area, I think.
Yeah, that's, I mean, in a way, it's, you know, somewhat satisfying knowing that, you know, that person is also deceased. But, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't help in terms of bringing back, you know, your loved ones and stuff like that, you know. But in a, you know, maybe a dark way, it's somewhat satisfying as well.
Yeah, I think you kind of felt that. You described that in your book. Kind of, and you actually use the word dark, I believe, you know, too. Yeah, it's interesting.
Right. Yeah, it is like a dark way to think about it, because obviously, you know, human life is a human life and it's valuable. And, you know, but at the same time, there are some just terrible people in this world. And, you know, getting rid of some of those people is, in a dark way, it's satisfying. You know, and I think Mark understood that too, just based on what you wrote in the book about, you know, how he felt it was his calling to go and kill terrorists, and that's what he wanted to go do. So I think he kind of felt that same way as well, right?
Yep, absolutely.
So in the years since Mark was killed, I'm sure there were some ups and downs. I know there were for me, you know, with grieving and mourning and, you know, just remembering his life. How have you and your family dealt with the loss?
Well, it's been different, much like, and you do such a good job of describing this in your book. You gave me a perspective where you allowed me to think about things that I hadn't probably thought about in that way before. Mom and dad grieved differently. Mom instantly, you know, she didn't really want to be around people in crowds or go to events, because there were, in the months following his death, there were memorial services and events and things we were invited to all the time.
Yeah.
And we went to them, but it just wore her out. And so mom kind of went more of a recluse type person. And really in her head, hopefully she doesn't care me sharing this, but in her head, she was kind of thinking that maybe within a few years she would die. And so maybe she could see Mark again. I think that was kind of her thought. That was her baby boy. And as a parent, I mean, I don't know how you could survive with when your children die. It's got to be the hardest thing in the world. Dad, you know, first of all, my dad cries, and never saw my dad cry before. I think I saw him cry once when his mom died in 98, but that was really it. And so now, you know, that's kind of how they grieve, I guess. Well, dad gets emotional talking about Mark, and mom has kind of kept to herself, but they've definitely done great work in helping the community with the foundation. Me, I just kind of went to work. And I started on the book right away. And that's kind of what really helped me. It took me 3 years to write the book. And how long did it take you? It was less than that.
Well, it probably was at least 2 years of actually dedicated writing. But I started writing it shortly after coming back from Afghanistan, but not with the intention of writing a book. It was just more journaling, like just jotting down dates and times and things that happened, just events, so that I wouldn't forget it down the road, because I knew as my kids got older, they were going to have questions about what did I do in the war and what happened to their uncle and all this kind of stuff. So I wanted to just have the factual type stuff written down. And so I started that early on, probably maybe late 2010, early 2011. And then it just sat there and I did nothing with it for years. And then it was a few years ago that I decided that it probably would make a good book and I should probably make this into something and write this book. And so Yeah, it probably took about 2 years, somewhere around there, from when I decided to start writing it as a book and convert all those notes into something legible.
I think that's good. I think it's good. Yeah. It allows you to really contemplate things and deal with your emotions a little bit.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know what the process was like for you, but I mean, I went through so many different drafts and rewrites of things too, that, you know, the direction that I started the book off in, it was a complete 180 by the time I finished. Like, it just, even the order of things that I put in the book were totally different than what it ended up being. And so, you know, it really was a process, but in a way, for me anyways, it was somewhat therapeutic to kind of just get it out there and just be like, okay, this is documented now. And I feel good about that because, you know, if I got hit by a truck or something and, you know, everything that I had in my mind, it was all of a sudden lost. Now that would be lost to history. And like, nobody would be able to go back and read any of that stuff, any of the events that took place or any of the things that I wrote about my brother, all that stuff would be pretty much lost. And so, you know, I was glad that it was out there, and now it's in a form that will outlive me. It'll outlive, you know, all of us, really, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you and I have the Bible of our brothers' lives kind of basically, and it are the best record out there. Right. Yeah. And I contacted somebody early on. So within a month, probably, of Mark's death, it was somebody that a friend knew that worked for a publishing company. And I was talking to her about what I wanted to do. And she was pretty negative. She's like, hey, the market is saturated with military books. And this was in, so October of 2010. I never thought it was saturated. I mean, if it was, it really is now. But, you know, she wasn't interested, and she didn't even think it was a good idea, of course. But that didn't faze me one bit. I was writing it regardless. I didn't care what it took, how much money it took. I was writing the book.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that, you know, I don't know about when you wrote your book, what the process was, because that was a few years before I wrote mine. But one of the things that I am so grateful for now is the ability to self-publish a book. So even if you wrote a book, you poured your heart into it, and you brought it to a publisher, and you brought it to 20 publishers, and they all shot it down and said, no, we're not going to publish this.
Yeah.
You could still publish a book, and you don't need to go through the traditional publishing companies and have the big distribution. I mean, probably 90%+ of books are sold on Amazon anyway. So if your book is on Amazon, you're probably good to go anyways, right?
Yeah. I joke with people that, hey, anybody can write a book now. I had a publisher, but we also use kind of through that self-publishing option. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Ultimately I went with the self-publishing option, mostly just for the speed of getting it out there, because I was talking to one publisher and they said, yeah, after we get the final manuscript, it's probably going to be at least 6 months before your book is published. And I was like, well, like, that doesn't even comprehend with me. Like, why does it take that long? Yeah. And so I'm sure they have their reasons, but I was like, you know what? I don't really care. I don't want to wait 6 months. I just want to get it out there. And, you know, but I guess it's the point that I wanted to bring up there is for the listeners, you know, if you are a Gold Star family member, if you had someone in the military, didn't have to be someone who served and died. They could have served in Vietnam and came back home and told you stories about that. You know, you could write these stories down and put them together in a book and publish them. And it costs you nothing to get them out there and publish, other than your time of compiling all this stuff. And, you know, why not? Why not put these stories out there and have them available for future generations to be able to read? I think that it's just, you know, such a great thing that we have available to us these days.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah. So right, we're talking about the book. We kind of touched on a little bit here and there throughout this episode so far, but tell us about the book and what readers can expect from the story.
Well, the book, you can imagine the bottom line up front. So you're going to find out immediately what happens. And, you know, I've read some of the reviews on Amazon, and I think some people may not like that. But what I found is, Scott, one other thing I did to help me is I like to speak. You know, people, I get invited to speak sometimes. I don't solicit that, but I get asked, and I'm thankful for that. And people seem to take an interest in the notification and, you know, kind of what happened there at the end. And so I just go ahead and put it right up front is what happens to Mark. And then we kind of start backtracking. And the different layouts, like you talked about organizing it differently. I really got a lot of help with Matthew Glencoe, who helped me. His name is on the book too. He helped me really organize it in the way it is now. My thinking was, you know, Mark is not a household name. So most people are not going to care about his growing up life, but this is a record of his life. And that's the way I looked at it. So we needed that for our family at least. So to try to make it as, you know, to make it interesting, to make it actual and factual, but also kind of interesting for the readers, we just mixed it up. And so it kind of goes, early, late, you know, early, late, kind of moves back and forth. So it mixes it up that way, I think, for the reader. So hopefully it's a little more interesting than going completely chronological.
Right. And in the chronological thing, I toyed around with that myself as well, going with basically the end of the story in the beginning and then you know, filling in the blanks. I toyed around with that. That was one of the versions that I had. And, you know, it was good in your book. I think it worked out well. I think just the way I wrote mine, it didn't work the way I was writing it. And so, you know, I ended up going more chronological. But at the end of the day, I don't think you can go wrong with any of that, because the way you did it, you wove in some of that early years stuff where it was appropriate in the story. You know, you're talking about, you know, the type of kid that he was, or the type of man that he was as he was older. But a lot of that has to do with the type of kid that he was, and you kind of wove that in through the story and stuff. So I think it was well done. And I hadn't read your book when I was on your podcast, the Patriot to the Core podcast. I have now, obviously. And when we were last talking, you almost seemed to be trying to convince me that you didn't think your book was written as well as mine was. That's the way it seemed to me. And I felt bad. And of course, since I hadn't read it, I couldn't really say anything about it. Like, oh no, you're crazy. Don't say that or anything. But now that I have, I felt like I need to say that your book actually had me choked up at some points. You know, reading the book, it just kind of, the emotions kind of hit me, because it was well written and it let me in on who this person was, who Mark was, and who he was to your family. And it almost made me feel like I was part of that. Like I knew a little bit about who he was, and it kind of stung when you were talking about some of the stuff when he was lost and everything like that. So, you know, it did have me choked up a little bit, and maybe just, you know, because of my own experiences, it kind of affected me a little bit differently than maybe your average reader. But still, I think I have to say, I have to just correct the record here and say, I thought your book was extremely well written, and the way that the story was told was done incredibly well. And so first off, I encourage listeners to go pick up a copy of this book, My Brother in Arms, to learn more about what the sacrifices are that Gold Star families go through, but also to learn about who this individual was, who Mark was, and take a look at all the stuff that you guys had to go through in that time period.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, I appreciate you saying that. I'm glad you had some emotion to the book. That's good. But yeah, I mean, I still think your book is very well written too. And I loved your book because I related so well to it. So it really got me thinking about some things that I hadn't thought about before, Scott.
Sure. Well, one of the things that you wrote about in your book that never really occurred to me. So let me just back up a second. So your family is Mormon faith. And so you talked about how that was a critical part of Mark's life and how you guys were brought up. And you started talking about some of the traditions and things like that. And growing up as a Catholic in my family, like, we, you know, Catholics have their own traditions and, you know, Mormons have their own traditions. And it's just interesting to hear some of the different things between the mission, the work that Mark did, and even you described some of the funeral and just the little variations to it. It was just interesting to me to learn more about that and get kind of just peel back the curtains a little bit and kind of get a little insight into what that was like for you and your family. It was an interesting part of the book. It kept me, you know, on my toes, kind of just trying to learn a little bit more about what you guys do in terms of traditions and all that kind of stuff too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. We all have our own. I think one thing I talked about probably was maybe you're thinking of like the dedicating the grave. I imagine other faiths do that. Maybe it's called something different. Yeah. That, and shoot, I don't know what else now.
Yeah, no, that was, I think that was what I was referring to. It was just interesting, you know, like you said, everyone has their own beliefs and faiths and traditions and all that kind of stuff. And they're all unique. They're all different, but they all are important to those families and to the communities that mm-hmm. they're in. And so, you know, I'm glad to have learned a little bit about what you guys do and how that all took place in your family, right?
Yeah.
So you briefly mentioned this before, but your family set up the Mark Forster Foundation, and you sent me this awesome hat for the people who are watching on YouTube. This hat. So thank you for that, by the way.
Good on you.
Yeah, thank you. So tell us about the foundation, what its mission is, and how people can go about supporting the mission.
Well, you know, we started getting people wanting to do something, you know, after when he was killed, and there's only so many flowers, you know, that you can take, and you know, they don't last long. And so you had that, and then you have, well, how do we really teach people about Mark and people like Mark? Because people, you know, the country at least, or the world needs to know about people that choose to fight evil and voluntarily serve. And even if they don't voluntarily serve, they serve. I mean, man, God bless the people who've been drafted as well. I mean, but we live in a day and time where we always have to have people to step up and to stand for what's right. So we have to, why don't we do our little part to help share that? And so we started the Mark Forster Foundation pretty quickly after his death. I think it was officially created as an official nonprofit in December of 2010. And so the priority is we provide at least one scholarship that I'm pretty sure we've never done. Well, we've done probably two or more every year to a Hayleville High School senior, which is the school we actually all went to. And so scholarships is the priority. Then whatever we have left, we give to other organizations, usually that support our military and veterans in some way or another.
Yeah, that's great. And especially with the education component of, you know, letting people know, you know, who Mark was and about the sacrifice that he made and everything like that. And so that's an awesome thing that you guys are doing. Where can people go to support the foundation if they are feeling like they want to help support this mission?
Yeah, markaforrester.com. And Forrester has got that no double R. It's one R in the middle, one at the end. Or you can go to jag28.com, just like it's on your cap on that eagle. You get a jag28 in there. That's Mark's retire call sign. So yeah, markaforrester.com or jag28.com is the foundation website. You can learn all about it there. We're just a family run organization, and I wish I could do it full time. That's what I love doing, but you know, I don't get to do it full time.
Well, you know, it's a great cause, and I think not doing it full time just means that there are other things that you're meant to be doing in this world too. I mean, it's great that it's there, but you know, there are other things that is in your wheelhouse right now that you need to be focused on. I bet you at some point you could probably make it a full-time thing if it's the right time, the right place and everything like that. You know what I mean? So we also mentioned that you're the host of the Patriot to the Core podcast. I want to give you the opportunity to talk about that a little bit. Tell us what the podcast is all about. And where people can go to check that out.
Well, it's really, I just interview great Americans. And in a lot of ways, I know it's not your format, but we also have some overlap, your podcast and mine. But a friend of mine came to me in probably 2015 and said, Thad, you should start a podcast because you know all these people these American heroes kind of thing. They're people that I learned you through my brother at the time. And I was like, well, I don't really know what a podcast is. I haven't been able to figure that out yet. I see this app on my phone and it looks like it's a great thing, but I don't even understand it. And so I just sat on that. Then maybe a year later or something, I said, I want to look into this more. So I called the guy up, said, hey, you told me I should start a podcast. Tell me more about it. So anyway, I started it in 2016 and I just started interviewing, started out with people I knew, people that I knew through my brother. These are just selfless people, you know, and of course, several of them have been injured severely or, you know, suffer, you know, PTSD, that type of thing, mentally and emotionally. And so it's branched out from there. It's not all military. It's heavy military, but that's just kind of how it's worked out. But people who serve their fellow man, who serve their country. And that's really what it is. It's just American patriots. And so I love doing it. I was doing two no, not 2 a week. I was doing one, 2 a month for a few years. And then I just life, you know, with that third kid and things going on, slowed down. So now I do when I can.
Yeah. And you know, it is a hard thing to keep the schedule where, you know, if you commit to okay, every, you know, Tuesday, I'm going to have an episode coming out and then you don't have a guest that week. It's like, okay, what am I going to do? What am I putting out? It's going to be an awfully boring episode if it's just me just out there ranting about whatever, you know? So
have you ever thought about like just stopping it, stop doing the podcast?
You know, I have been asked that before and I have this, I don't know if it's like an OCD kind of thing, but like once I get started on something, I'm going to keep going at it until I stop. If you ever are subscribed to this podcast and there's like a day that's missed, be like, okay, he's done because there's nothing else. Like that's when it's going to end is I'm just going to be done at that point. I don't know. Like right now it's not even on my radar. It's not even something to even consider is stopping. I don't see myself stopping anytime soon. I mean, I've done this almost 4 years now and I haven't missed a week for putting out an episode in that time period. And if I can help it, if I'm sick in the hospital or something like that and I physically can't do it, then obviously I'm not going to do it, but you know, I'll get right back to it as soon as I can. But I mean, I'll do it as much as I can for as long as I can, because there are so many stories like yours and your family story, stories of other people like the people you have on your podcast, like these people who go out and voluntarily serve their country, their communities or whatever. And they do all these incredible things. Like, yeah, we got to share these stories and we got to help these people too, as many of them as we can, because there are so many people out there who are just suffering in silence. They don't know about some of the resources that are available to them. And, you know, part of this podcast, part of my mission with this is to share as much as I can with those people and help them out in any way that I can. And as long as that number of, you know, 22 a day, they keep throwing that number around. As long as that number isn't going down, as long as that number is not zero, I should say, I feel like I need to keep doing this. And, you know, if that means I'm going to do it for another 20, 30 years, then I'll do it for another 20, 30 years. You know, who knows if podcasting even will be a thing then. Maybe it'll be something else and we'll just, you know, telepathically transmit it to our brains or something. Oh, yeah. But no form it takes, I'll keep doing it and, you know, keep helping people as long as I can.
Yeah, you got a good thing going for sure. Yeah, and every time I think about quitting, I'm like, you know, I love it though. Or I'll release an episode like, oh yeah, okay, I love this. But I think about it a lot.
You know, I will say though, I have had a couple times where scheduling with a guest that just didn't work out. Like none of the episodes that have come out, this is not anything that I'm talking about with any of them, but where people say that they're going to come on the show, they're going to be a guest, and we schedule a time, we set it all up, and I'm sitting there and I got the screen open, I'm waiting for them to show up, and then nothing, like 15, 20 minutes later, still nothing. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? So I reach out to the person, like, oh yeah, sorry, my kid was sick or something. And then they come back and let's reschedule for next week. Okay, cool. Let's do it. And we'll reschedule. And then they do the same thing the next week. Those people drive me nuts. And eventually I'm just like, you know what? Never mind.
Yeah.
It's not worth it. You can go tell your story to somebody else, but it's not going to be here because I'm not wasting my time.
Well, you seem to make it clear now, you know, when you prep people, you just let them know, don't do that.
Yeah, well, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. I put that in the notes that I sent to all the guests is, you know, just, I mean, be on time. Like, it's just a common courtesy thing. Like, just be on time. And if you can't be on time, I get it. Like, life happens. Just let me know. Shoot me a one line email or something and just say, hey, can't make it. Cool. No problem. We'll reschedule. But if I'm sitting there for 15, 20 minutes just staring at a blank screen, I'm probably going to be a little ticked off. So, man, I think your story and your message that you have in your book and everything that you've been doing through your podcast, through, you know, the book, through the foundation for Mark, to me, it's just inspirational knowing that the worst can happen to you, to your family. You know, your little brother didn't make it home. You know, that's such an awful thing. Like you said, for your parents, like no parent should have to bury a child, but seeing you now, it's now 12 years later, seeing you being able to tell the story and just getting that out there, sharing with other people, to me, it's just, it's inspirational knowing that even in your darkest days, there is better days ahead. There are better days ahead. That was terrible English. But there are better days ahead. And it's just inspiring to know that. And hopefully for the listeners who are out there who might be in a similar situation, maybe they're dealing with some grief or loss in their life, or even if it's not a grief situation for them, maybe it's they're just having a rough time in their life. Just knowing that no matter how bad it gets, better days are ahead and good things can come still, despite all that the bad that has taken place, yeah. Right?
Yeah. And don't be afraid to ask people. This is what I feel strongly, Scott, is if you know someone's going through something hard, that they've, it's not just a death, but well, let's just talk about a death because of our show here, but feel free to ask them about that person. Now, they may not choose to talk about it. I mean, it just depends on the person, I know, but for the most part, people want to talk about that their loved one. And if there's emotion that comes from it, then that means, you know, somebody you cared. And so I think it's better to ask them, or, you know, you could even say, hey, I was just, you know, I miss Mark. I was thinking about him. And, or can you tell me what happened? I saw a friend just a few months after Mark's death and in Walmart, and I hadn't seen him in 15 years at least. And he said, hey, what happened? And I appreciated that. And I realized that there are some people that don't deal with grief like that or may not like it. But for the most part, I think it's okay to ask people and don't be afraid. And if they don't want to tell you, they won't. But they're probably going to appreciate you showing some concern versus, I know some people get uncomfortable and say, hey, I don't know what to say. So you avoid the elephant in the room. I don't think that does any good.
Yeah. And I feel like, especially years after the death, right? In the immediate couple weeks after that death, you got everybody and their mother knocking down your door. They're there to support you. They're doing everything. They're coming over your house, or they're making meals, or bringing flowers, or doing all these things. You mentioned you had, you know, more flowers than you knew what to do with. And, you know, I don't know if your family had the same situation with meals, but we had more food than we knew what to do with. I mean, we could have fed most of the town. Like, we had so much food.
We had to have people managing the food, just where to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't have enough refrigerator space or freezer space or anything like that for all of this food. And eventually it would go bad. So, like, you know, people would come over and we'd send them home with like plates of food. Like, here, take this too, because we don't know what to do with all of it.
Yeah.
And that outpouring of support is great. I'm not like knocking that at all. But years later, when you have maybe a holiday or an anniversary or something like that comes around, and I don't know about you, but sometimes it's sad. You know, it's like, man, that I'd love to spend Christmas with my brother. You know, I'd love to have him around, you know, but you know, it's just not our reality. It's just not going to happen. And, you know, it's just people reaching out and just checking in on you and seeing, you know, hey, how you doing? You know, what's going on? You know, that type of thing means the world to me anyways. And it sort of goes along the lines of what you were just saying about, you know, people just asking the questions, reaching out, you know?
Well, and sometimes you may go through, like for me, I went through probably a period of numbness for several years. And then it kind of hits like, wow, it's been a long time. I haven't seen Mark in a long time. You went through your own grieving process, and some of it was, you know, kind of unhealthy, and that you talk about. We deal with it all differently. And so it's important to just to not forget. And yeah, I mean, and we do have a great support system, and all Mark's teammates out there. I mean, there's so many of y'all that contact us. We just greatly appreciate it.
Yeah. And those people, you know, especially the people that served with my brother, and I'm sure the people who serve with your brother as well, they've been great. They've reached out to us, you know, consistently. And some of them, they do it in their own time too. They, you know, they weren't maybe quite ready to reach out right away in the first, you know, couple of years, right? Because that's often an overlooked thing, is it's hard for the people who serve with them too, friends. That, I mean, especially if they were there when he was killed, like, that's a hard thing to do, is to watch your friend be killed. And you know, they got to process through all of that stuff as well. And so
some of them feel guilty.
Oh, sure. Yeah, definitely. There's definitely a guilt thing with that. There's definitely some, maybe a little bit of shame. Like, you know, I feel like I can't talk to the family because maybe they'll look at me like it's my fault or something. And, you know, for the people who are out there who have experienced loss like that, you know, from my family's point of, you know, I think I'm speaking for my family and I'm pretty sure I know how they all feel about it, but like none of us hold any grudges against any of the people who were serving with my brother who, you know, after he was killed, we don't feel like they were responsible or that, you know, we should hold a grudge against them or anything like that. Like that's just not, it's not fair to them to do that. Like it won't change anything. It's not going to bring them back. You know, why would we do something like that? You know? And so if you feel like if you're one of those people and you feel like you want to reach out to the family, you're just not sure how they're going to receive it, you know, definitely just reach out because I feel like it would be doing more good than bad if you do. Right.
Yeah. 100%.
Well, Thad, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today. I really do appreciate you taking the time to come on the show and share your brother's story. And I also want to thank you for all that you've done and for your family's sacrifice. I mean, that's not an easy thing to do, to lose a family member that way. And to continue doing what you're doing now and sharing his story and coming on this show right now, it just shows incredible amount of strength and that support system that you were talking about, you know, has done its job and it has definitely allowed you to, you know, pick up where Mark left off.
Hey, thank you. It's my honor and I'll do it the rest of my life is to represent my little brother. And it's a passion, of course, it's the labor of love of the book. And so I hope people didn't tune out when I invented a word earlier in the podcast, Scott. I knew something didn't sound right. I said something like validate instead of validate. So I was like, is that a word? Anyway.
I didn't even catch that you said that, but I'm sure when I run this podcast through the transcript thing that, you know, it'll probably pick that word up. I'll be like, okay. What did he say?
I know. Something was not right with what I said, but I can't point it out. I figured it out. So
no worries.
It's been great. I appreciate you having me and thank you for your book and what it did for me. Your book should be read and it also helps people to probably start thinking, hey, maybe it's okay to talk to somebody too, to help me deal with whatever I'm dealing with. So you did a good job there.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah. And definitely for the people who are listening, not only is it okay to talk to the family members of the fallen service members, it's okay to go talk to somebody professionally too, if you need help with whatever it is that you're dealing with, whatever you're going through. Yeah. Communication is key and nothing's going to get better if you just keep it all trapped inside. Talk to somebody.
Yeah.
Talking will help.
Scott, one thing you just made me reminded me of is George, one of Mark's teammates in the book, he was there with Mark just a short distance away when he was killed. George came to see us in March of 2011. And I think I describe in the book how he was very nervous and approaching Haleyville, approaching the Mark Force, Senior Airman Mark A. Force Memorial Drive, every little bit getting closer. And so he was very worried about how we would receive him. And he's a great friend. And so we've got a little bit of that perspective in the book.
Yeah. So, for the listeners, definitely check out the book. I will have a link to the book in the show notes. I also have a link to Mark Forrester Foundation website, everything else, all the social media links and everything like that. I'll have all of that in the show notes. So if you are interested in supporting the foundation or getting a copy of the book, definitely check out those show notes and we'll link to it right there for you. So again, Thad, thank you for joining me. I really do appreciate you taking this time.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me, Scott.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Son, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.